So welcome everybody to the next episode of the Boltcast. Oz is with me as always, and we have a big announcement today. Oz, this is it, man. We're going to announce that we are now officially part of Raisa Studios' internal development team. This happened several weeks ago. We were both reached out by Renato himself asking us to join, and we've been involved to a large degree in the development over the past couple of weeks, including a lot of the exciting parts of patch 1.3. And I think the big story here, Oz, is the work that you've been involved in. So, and that's to deal with the sticky diff. Could you explain to everybody once again what the sticky diff was and, you know, why it was important?
Yeah, so the sticky diff is a long-standing, or was, happy to say, was a long-standing issue with AMS2, where the differential, the clutch LSD, to be exact, which is used in the majority of cars that has an LSD. There's actually only one exception to that, and that's the G40, which uses a geared LSD. We'll come back to that, actually.
Right.
Okay. But the cars like GT3, GT1, all the F1 cars, F Retro, F Vintage, GT4, you name it. Anything that uses a clutch LSD, even some of the cars behind the scenes use a clutch LSD, even though you can't see it in the setup. That is just the way the setup's UI has been set up.
Like fixed ones, yeah, fixed LSDs.
Yeah, fixed divs can still actually be LSDs behind the scenes. They're not meant to be open. It's just that you just can't see the values in the setup UI because you can't change it, so the values were hidden. So that can also be a bit confusing, perhaps, but that is the case. But yeah, the what happened with the clutch LSD is that it really liked, or it really loved to just stick locked. So what that means is this would actually show up in two ways. The first and the big one is how it affected turn in, and that subtle rear axle or the rear of the car getting a bit loose. It didn't have to get like you don't need to get it like out of control for you to notice this. It's just more, for example, driving on the straight, weaving a bit left to right, and then if you lift, even though the car doesn't spin out, you will notice that the dynamic changes a bit.
Right.
And in a car with a lot of aero or downforce, this isn't necessarily load transfer, because it probably doesn't really change the balance
right.
much at all.
That's a good point.
It's just the rear axle changing, because it goes from locked when you're on the throttle. If the diff is set up correctly, it should stay closed. So let's say you're driving on straight with a car with a lot of downforce, so just like a GT3, for example, and you're on throttle, or full throttle, you're weaving left to right a bit, seeing how that feels, and then you lift, and the car's dynamic changes ever so slightly. Doesn't have to spin out necessarily. Actually, that would be bad. That would be I would call that a bad setup. I'm sure you would call that a bad
yes.
setup. You do not want that. That would be lift off oversteer.
Yeah.
But it does change ever so slightly. Your first thought is that, oh, there's load transfer. But that's not necessarily the case with aero cars with low center of gravity, because there's like barely any. I mean, unless you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but unless unless you have really soft suspension and the pitch sensitivity of the aero is really high, there is really like there's like really no load
transfer. Yeah, the back of the car is not lifting off the ground. It's
we're
talking about like a mechanical function of the diff that frees up the car to make a turn, as opposed to the and load transferring so much that the car just like literally the rear tires lose traction. Yeah, there's a difference there. Yeah. But yeah, continue.
That is yes. So everything that's going on with the like I'm getting like the front spite in more. That's just the that's just the diff being a bit looser. So you just feel like it's a bit loose, maybe a bit nervous, but not like actually to a point where it's bad. So that is what the stick a diff was preventing, because it really loved the stick closed. It needed a big force to get it open, and or a bit like a long sustained force, and that was really just masking or removing all of this.
Well, I mean, so, I think the ultimate point is like the cars were performing like they should. Like if you have a locked coast ramp phase, and you go into corner, it's the car's going to want to go straight. And then you go through the corner, yes. It's going to continue to want to go straight. What was happening was there was a certain amount of tightness to the corner that the car required for the diff to actually unlock to a certain extent. And when it did, the yaw would increase uncomfortably, I guess you could say. And there was a lot of circumstances that decreased the drivability of the cars. And I think the most popular and obvious one was, you know, you're cornering at a medium speed corner at a moderate pace, and you'd expect to come off the throttle a little bit, the car to turn in a little bit more. Whereas depending on the differential settings, if you did that in AMS2, and I think the Porsche was probably a big culprit of this, if you came off the throttle, the car would go even straighter. It would do the opposite of what you wanted to do. So people had to compensate for that by adding extreme not only driving skills, but also doing what I did, was just basically lock the thing up even more so that it didn't yaw so much. So it got more comfortable. It added more deliberate driving style. You really had to manipulate the car in a different way. But I think that, you know, if we go back to the origins of this, this has been around for, I don't know, I'm going to say a greater part of the year. This isn't a new phenomenon. This is something that's been talked about on the Rise of Forums, and I think it was the first time I ever came across you, Oz, was on the physics thread.
That is right.
And Crimson. And, you know, this early days, AMS2, and this thread was started, and I remember how interesting the thread was. And the funny thing is about that thread, it all threads online, like all forums, it kind of got like hijacked. But you had to get through all the fluff and all of the verbosity of a lot of the people posting. But if you got, sometimes when you're reading threads, you really have to search for the kernels of truth. And I felt like you had it right. I think Crimson had it right. You guys were onto something. Now, my circles, I was a data guy, and, you know, looking at the data after reading, over the course of time, after reading things like what you were writing, you could see on the telemetry the differential opening in a very, at the time, I couldn't even say it was weird. It just seemed normal to me. For AMS2 normal, I guess, it was like a new normal. So I didn't really see any deviations. It was just like the car's doing the same thing over and over again. And you kind of had to adapt to it and move on with your life. But then at some point, you know, when you start really, really getting to know what you're doing, like I realized, okay, these things are kind of opening up, you know, 5%, like say a 5% diff unlock in less than a millisecond. You know, that is what we're talking about here, you know. So I remember taking screenshots of them, sending them to people that I knew, Stacker Pentecost, aka Tori, Crimson, you, and we all sort of form like this little group, like the sticky diff group. And we all know that Crimson has he was part of the internal team before we were, and you know, he would talk to us about it, and we were trying to do our best to try to explain what it was, to show what it was, and I do think that, like, Reza knew that something was up, but there was just so much going on with the drive line at the time that they just, you know, they didn't get around to it until now, and lo and behold, we come on board right at that time, and it was an exciting time for me, and obviously for you. So I don't know how much you want to get into, you know, the reason why you were brought in, but ultimately, you know, just tell us, like, we were brought in at this time and you had some coding knowledge, right? So, you know, you and Renato got into it and you got into the diffs, right? Is that how it basically worked?
Yeah. So we were invited to join the internal testing team. But with that came this extra opportunity to, you know, take a look around and see if I can spot any improvements to be done. And I've been, you know, like you explained, being part of this sticky diff group. That reminds me of the sticky bandits from Home Alone.
Yeah, it's sort of like a 1920s, like, you know, dirt street kid gang, like the sticky diff gang.
Where was I? So with that came the opportunity to look around the code, and being part of the sticky diff gang, I just I went to the drive line straight away, and yeah, I found issues, and that's really the the short version. The long version, one thing to know, by the way, is about this, or understand about this, is finding an issue is one thing, having the follow through is another. So
right,
with this fix, the diff fix, because of the way it then affected the diff setups that we would need to have,
mm-hmm,
it had a major, like, follow through phase of changing every single default diff setup.
It sent a shockwave through the entire, all the cars with LSDs or clutch LSDs.
Yeah. So we had to know that it's right, and it's not a sidestep, and we would just end up resetting the setups again in a month. That would not be good. So yeah, so we were sure, we were testing out that this is really working now. And the two things, like, have already been mentioned in the change log and the dev logs. The two changes that are important here are the first off the removal of the sticky diff phenomenon. So you really shouldn't see that anymore.
Right.
The diff opens gradually. It can be very slightly open at all times. And not all times, but like the second you, or the like a blink after you lift, it doesn't like jump open. It's just like, well, it's just like slips a bit.
It's not going to fight you anymore.
Yeah.
If you want to turn the car, it, depending on your settings, it's not going to fight you. You could have it open as you want it or locked as you want it. You could honestly make the cars locked as they were before if you wanted. But nowadays, like, you can turn the wheel and the car is going to follow where you want the car to go, which is, I think, is phenomenal as far as drivability is concerned.
Yes. And the second, that was still perhaps a bit, this gets to the sidestep thing, because that then wasn't actually enough. There was another problem there, and that was the preload calculation fix. Yeah, so these two together were the big one. Fixing the sticky diff alone would have been something, but I think actually, I believe it is true now that alone would still have left it a bit weird. We would have had weird diff settings,
right,
etc. the preload calculation fix has to do with the way preload works in clutch LCs, and it's this constant force from preload springs that is applied to the clutch packs, and the clutch packs are the thing that apply the locking, if you will. And then you also get force from when you get on the throttle that applies the torque that is going through the diff is applied to ramps, and these are your ramp angles, and the ramp angles turn that into force on the clutch packs, again much like the preload, but this one is dynamic. It depends on the torque you're getting in the driveline. And same story with coast. That is when you lift and get negative torque, as in engine brake. Ultimately, what it meant was that the preload and the ramps were in perfect balance with each other now after the fix. And both got applied the same, let's say, lock per clutch, which is also a thing that has been mentioned before, like ages ago, in right. Change locks. But the thing to understand there is basically just, because you have the clutch packs and that you have the number of clutches. So lock per clutch is like how much, whatever force you're applying on the clutches, how does that translate into locking? That is lock per clutch. And the amount of clutches is just the multiplier for that.
Yeah.
So if you have two clutches, it's two times lock per clutch. If you have eight clutches, it's eight times your lock per clutch.
200 and whatever percent of two is, yeah.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Yeah, like four would be double, you know, and six would be 50 more percent of that, and then eight would be, you know, 25% more than that, whatever the number is, yeah.
But everything a lot more flowing, lock. Yeah, everything now flows through that. Logic, preload, and ramps. And everything is in balance now. And yeah, it just really makes sense when you start changing the diff setup. And the other thing that changed actually now, because I said that the ramps and preload are in perfect balance. The problem before was getting on the power. You didn't really get the power lock you expected. This is all related to the preload calculation fix, more or less. So there's a lot that goes... that we managed to
So what I think you're saying is you know, you uncovered like the big one, and then you found out how many other related items there were that were interfering or not working properly, and then you had to address all of these different components in the driveline one by one until they were sort of in a more unified balance. And what it means for a user or driver, you know, someone like me going in, ultimately what it means is, like, when I make a change on the screen, it's not going to overpower everything else. It's just going to do what it's supposed to do and, you know, make the incremental changes that you'd expect. But everything is going to have, you know, equalized or uniform, you know, results, which means... Exactly. You know, if you need a little bit more power ramp, you can add it and you can feel the effects. If you need a little bit more preload, you can feel the effects. It's not going to overpower the coast or the power. It's really a beautiful thing. But then even after that, like, you were involved in some of the other cool stuff that is now featured in AMS2, and that's some of the flexibility of the drive line altogether, right? So describe what that is. Like, I didn't really understand it when you first explained it to me, but apparently the driveline has some kind of give to it, and and that's what makes the infamous wub wub.
The infamous wub wub. Yeah, that's actually good to address here as well. So the change log calls it the addition of elasticity modeling. Driveline elasticity, or flex, like you said, is the components in the driveline. So think about all the joints you have between the engine and your driven wheels. All the different components, the joints and the shafts and the clutch and the gearbox, between your engine and your driven wheels having some give. And they even have to have some give, because the alternative to that is, as far as I understand, snapping.
Right.
You probably like shock. Don't want your...
Like shock yeah. through the entire system, as opposed to like sort of like a softer kind of... Even if it's just like microseconds, it's microseconds softer through the whole system.
Yeah. And yeah, you're going to notice... That now is of course the GT3 car is really stiff, but at the same time it's on sticky tires, so because it's all, you know, everything affects everything. So in a road car you won't really necessarily notice it that much, although driving right. on the road in your, if you have a car, if you drive it and abruptly lift the throttle, even though they're designed to be smooth, you usually still notice some driveline elasticity, actually, as far as I understand. But at the end of the day, the driveline is going to be in between, acting as a, you can think of it as a massive spring.
Okay, so as far as, you know, the end line driver is concerned, I think the way we're going to feel this flex is it's not going to be as snappy. It's going to be a little bit more smooth as far as your throttle inputs are concerned, right?
Yeah. So basically, any sudden changes in the driveline will have to go through this giant spring, and which is just the way of talking about it. It's not actually a giant spring. So any giant any sudden force won't cause tire slip necessarily. And the other thing is as well, going over bumps, you could feel even previously that the revs were jumping up and down. So that's nothing new. But now when you do the same thing, the driveline, the elasticity will actually make it seem smoother because it's not super stiff.
Right.
But at the same time, it sounds like it's oscillating, which is also the case.
Okay.
Also, in some cars, when you lift in first or second gear, you're also going to have that like overrun oscillation from the driveline. You know, it's going to be like the driveline is tense when you're on the power.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lift, it's going to release that tension. So that, and in braking zones as well, that also will seem a bit different, because when you're on the brakes and the bumpy, your rear tires are going to actually maybe even get off the tarmac for very brief moments, and then the tires will start to lock up, and then they hit the tarmac again, and that will cause this causes this like extreme forces on the driveline. So previously when it was stiff, that was all the, you know, the tires and the engine had to sort of be in sync at that moment. So if right. the revs didn't, it had to shoot up again, like immediately. Whereas now it's, of course the tires are still gonna slip, but they can actually also, the driveline and the give that it has acts as a, like a sort of a buffer. It's a really complicated thing to
sounds just, like just, it.
It's a really complicated thing to say, to state that it does this and this thing. The thing is just that all these sudden forces have an extra place to go now, right. temporarily. They still have to, you know, they have to, they're stored in the driveline as well, because since it is a giant spring.
Yeah. And every car is different too.
Every car is different. Not every car has elasticity yet.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So you would know. Because you've been doing it.
You will know.
Well, you would know.
Also, I would know as well. But everyone will know as well. Although this isn't the surefire way of knowing it. But you will know for sure if a car has driveline elasticity. When you switch on the pit limiter and drive against the pit limiter, You will
unleash the wub.
Yeah, you will get this wub situation. That's not broken. That's just the way the pit limiter works with the elasticity.
No, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic thing to experience. I think the cars that I particularly liked was the Merc AMG GT3 and the Corvette C3R. Those were very, very pronounced. It was really, really, really great. Oh, the Ginetta G55 was also kind of up there too, as far as that. But I noticed it in a lot of cars too. And it adds, from just a baseline when you're leaving the pits, it adds a level of immersion that we didn't have before. It just seemed kind of, it makes everything before seem robotic. Now it seems like the cars, the car's telling you, let's get going, man, I'm ready to go, and you're just like, okay, let's get to that white line first, buddy. And then when you get there, it just sort of just wants to go. But I think ultimately what it feels like for me was everything just seemed smoother, and which I wanted to segue that into the drivability of the cars now. And I wanted to touch a couple of things that I've noticed just in the few multiplayer races that I've had since the patch, and how great they were. And I think the driveline fixes and the setup adjustments that went along with them have really kind of made not only the player more attached to the car, but attached to the track as well, and giving the players a little bit more variability about what they can do on track, which I mean by that is controlling the car in racing situations. Now, if you're doing a time trial or out there practicing or you're doing testing like I do, you're the only one on track. You're in the optimum line. You're on, the grippiest part of the track, and you're trying to get around the track as fast as you possibly can, like everybody does. But in racing situations, when you're side by side with cars, you're going to have to brake earlier when you're on the inside. You're going to have to cut a corner closer when you're on the inside and give people on the outside space. Before, it was difficult to do that. Like you kind of lost the car a little bit. But now, with everything being a lot more smooth in the drive line and the setups being, tuned to this, I found myself being able to hold the inside line a lot better, even though there's less grip, giving more people space, which ultimately led to closer quarters driving. I had a three-way battle with some, just in Porsche Cups at Interlagos this afternoon, and it was one of the greatest sim racing experiences that I've had in a long time, because it was three cars, and we were basically swapping. One of us would get in the front, and then, there would be a counterattack. And during that counterattack, we both kind of slowed down, and the third car would, sneak up the inside. It was a phenomenal racing. And I don't recall that ever happening before in AMS2. And it all became more apparent to me when I realized that, all three of us in that battle could control our cars through unique situations where previously we couldn't. One of us would have inevitably spun out, maybe taken out one or both of us. The lucky guy would be the one that's left out on the track to take, third place. Now it was almost to the point where I just ran out of time. Like, I wanted to pass these guys, and I was ahead of them, and then I lost it, and then I got it back, and then I lost it again. And then, the laps ran out, and I was like, even though I came in fourth place, I was like, that was the most fun fourth place I've ever had. So, hats off to you, Oz, for all the work that you've done. I know it's a lot. It's complicated, as we all heard, but at the same time, I think it's worth it. And I have to stress the fact that you were doing this for not just there's not a global change. It's not like you're just punching in a couple numbers and then you punch your ticket and you're done. Like, this is a refinement process. This is a tuning process for a lot of different cars. Every car has a different drive shaft weight, You know, so like every drive line needs to be finely tuned. So good on you,
that
man.
Thanks. That is also a long process that has only gotten started. But yeah, it's a very interesting thing to me. And
yeah,
I'll keep at it.
Yeah, we're both going to.
Yeah.
I didn't really get into what I was doing for Razor, but you know, I just want to officially put on the record that I'm making default builds for a lot of the cars now. So the GT3s, the GTEs, the GT4s, with help from others. There's a lot of cars to get through in a short period of time, with all the diff changes, all the suspension work I've done predominantly for those cars. And it was just an I was really happy to get the opportunity to do that for Renato and for Reza and the team. They are a small team, very collegiate, very passionate. And ever since I joined them, it was kind of a culture shock about how, you know, they were just so into every single thing they did, any hour of the night. And I was impressed by that, and it kind of rubbed off on me, and I wanted to do my best too. So yeah, everybody out there, if you're driving a GT3 or you're planning on driving a GT3 and you're going to do the setup, it was done by me. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think for the channels, as far as the channel's concerned, the custom default series is now kind of redundant, Oz. I'm not going to be doing custom defaults for production for YouTube. Instead, I'm just going to use that time and try to do work on cars for Reza and then see how it comes out on the other end. But I think this is a good time to wrap this one up. I'm sure
there's
we'll
one
be able
more.
To.
One more thing. I promised I would mention the G40.
Oh, you wanted to talk about the G40. I'm sorry. The geared LSD. Sure.
The only car using a geared LSD in the game. poor thing. So even that now works as it should. That was also it wasn't really on anyone's radar, I think, because some people already like that car, but it is now also really different because it feels much more
natural,
say, natural and maybe like light on its feet. It's
okay.
You're not brute forcing rotation.
I think the way you drove the car was kind of just to snap it around the corner and try to power drift it around corners.
Yeah.
It's just not my driving style per se, but it is the driving style of a lot of people out there. So unfortunately, they're the losers, and I'm the winner on that one, I think. But that diff is completely different than the clutch. That's a worm gear. There is no slip in that thing. It's sort of just like you're just shifting torque. It's really kind of an interesting
that one
phenomenon. I wouldn't want to get my hand caught in that. That's for sure.
No, and that I have to admit that wasn't really subject to like any. It doesn't seem like it needs it. It needs it in the first place. But I'm just saying, it wasn't subject to any like LSD fixes per se. It was just fixed in another way. But I have to admit that the more I try to read about the geared LSD or the torsion, like watch videos about it, the more confused I am. So I hope it works right.
They lost me at worm gear. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you just look at the thing and it's just like it's a mass of gears just spinning around. You're just like, okay, how does this work? I'm lost.
It is the Rudy Goldberg, or it's like a contraption that it's intentionally designed to perform a simple task in an indirect and overly complicated way.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's not the case. That is not the case actually with the geared LSD. It's an ingenious invention, and it's just that like it's impossible to understand.
Right.
It works. So,
what we see on the screen is torque bias. So that's how you manipulate it, sort of like an LSD. Like you're manipulating how the car behaves when you're off the throttle and when you're on the throttle. So just play around with it, I guess, and find the right settings for it that fits your driving style.
Yeah, unless those, I forget if those are locked actually, which, yeah, but I mean, the thing to know, like you said, it doesn't actually slip anything. It's more, it has ratios for how much it's dividing the tire speeds or alone. It's really complicated. Right. I don't know.
Well, let's go ahead and call it then. I think that's a lot of exciting news for me personally. I know for you, we've been in it for a couple of weeks now. I'm going to get some sleep. And I'm really happy the way the cars are driving right now. I'm sure you are too. It's sort of unlocked everything as far as setups are concerned. And I haven't even gotten into that yet. But looking forward to building more cars. Looking forward to putting out more content. And Oz, I wanted to thank you again personally. This thing is, this really changed. All the work that you've put in is fantastic. So thanks again. And for everybody else out there, thanks for listening and take care.